This is the Living Fearless Today podcast, a show that helps men like you and me who are struggling to get unstuck and overcome fear to live confidently and courageously. I'm your host and transformation coach, Mike Forrester, helping you create the change you want now. Join me as I interview men who've conquered their challenges and soared to success as they spill their secrets on how they live fearless today. Well, hello and welcome back, my friend. And this week, Jason Weening is joining me. And Jason is just has a huge heart for dads. And you're going to see as he talks about like the struggles he's faced and gone through and where he's at. Man, it is not one where, you know, you look at it as a dad and you go, it's only me that's struggling with time and where I'm at and my finances and what's going on. It's universal. And Jason just, again, huge heart for dads. He's hosting a podcast that's focused on helping men. We're going to get into that. And I'm just super excited to have somebody who isn't just looking at it from a microscopic kind of how do I get through this, but rather a larger scope of how do I share my experiences and encourage men to continue on in both their growth as a man, but also as a father. And dude, it's just so powerful. Jason, how are you doing today, my friend?
I'm doing great, Mike. And thank you so much. It is an honor to be talking with you and super grateful to be here. Thank you.
Absolutely, brother. Well, it has been amazing just in our conversation of going like, yeah, this happened, wasn't planned. I don't know how much occurs, and that's like kind of the vibe of the story is like, yeah, that wasn't planned.
Yeah.
So it's just, it's, I think the motto of dads is like roll with the punches and figure it out, right?
That's the motto.
Well, cool. Well, Jason, what does it look like for you today on the professional side of life?
Yeah, sure. So, I currently work for a video production company, remotely. So I'm kind of project managing for, commercials and real estate and landscaping and the green industry sort of world. That's kind of where our video stuff goes. So I do that, and I'm also, it's actually kind of part-time. We made some decisions a few years ago that gave us a little bit of financial leverage. So I've written a book, I've got a podcast, a YouTube channel. It's called The Lifeguards Show, and that's our podcast as well, helping men guard their lives and thrive at home and at work. And really the heart behind that was my friend Ryan and I, we had looked around and were listing off buddies that were getting separated, getting divorced, and breaking our heart. Number one, because some of these were close friends and like, how did I not see that coming as a friend? And number two, you know, what could we do to maybe encourage other men and talk about our own mistakes and just be like what you just said, you know, everyone's got something that they're going through and you're not alone in that. So, you know, we use the phrase cultivating wisdom from mistakes, and we're trying to learn from our mistakes. We all make them. So we talk about them, we interview guys and talk about them, and hopefully people are learning from our mistakes and thriving, not just at home or not just at work. Lots of men are thriving at work, but also thriving at home.
Well, and you're offering the better wisdom, dude. It is so much better to learn from somebody else's mistake than to make the mistake and go, I wish I'd known. No, look, just go listen to their podcast, watch their YouTube videos, learn from somebody else's mistake. And I can say I've made a ton of them. I think we all do. We just don't talk about it.
Yes.
But learn from somebody else instead of making it yourself, right?
I think Dave Ramsey, I have a book here somewhere. One of his, I think he calls it the stupid tax, and we'll get someone else to pay your stupid tax. I've paid a lot of stupid tax to Visa and MasterCard. And you know what? Dave Ramsey says, let someone else pay your stupid tax. So I use that phrase a lot.
Yeah, no, it's always less painful. It doesn't have the same interest rate. Let's put it that way.
Exactly.
Well, dude, what does life look like on the personal side today?
Yeah. So like I said, We sold our house and bought a smaller, not a smaller, a less expensive house, but actually a nice property with some acreage, and we moved. So it gave us a little bit of financial freedom to do some other things. And I have 9 kids. I have 10 kids. 9 of them are breathing air right now, and one of them is breathing water. But in about 6 weeks, you know, I'll see what we've got, if it's a boy or a girl. But number 10 is on the way. So we've got the whole, people ask how old your kids. I'm like, well, they're kind of all, name an age. I probably got one that's age, but they're 0 to 18. So we live on about 8 acres up in Saskatchewan, Canada, and just ordered some chicks. We're going to have 25 laying hens show up in a little while. And so we're trying to get back to nature. We love being outside. The kids are out. I just saw them drive by the window on their bikes. But I have a great patient wife that puts up with me and lets me try new things. But yeah, we love being with our family and making mistakes and learning from them.
Yeah. I mean, it's like when you're not playing small and you're playing like all in, you're going to make mistakes. But like from the sounds of it, you and your wife are both on the same page, you know, making decisions, saying, hey, we're going to try this, we're going to invest, and being intentional about the road you're going. Is that pretty accurate?
Yeah. Yeah. Like I try to use that exact phrase a lot of time, is like, be intentional. And on my little about section, and I say, dads, we have to be intentional about leading and loving our families. If you aim at nothing, you hit it every time. So if you're not doing things with intention, you know, you're not going to get where you want to go. So a mentor of mine, he used to say that all the time. If you aim at nothing, you hit it every time. I think it maybe came from Zig Ziglar, but it's wisdom.
Probably. And it wasn't something that it's like you and I have to repeat. Now we've heard it from somebody else who followed that or saw it, and we can be wiser for the experience down the road. Right. Mm-hmm. So, now you had mentioned earlier about as far as, like Dave Ramsey and credit cards. Let's jump back a bit. Mm-hmm. And one that it would have been helpful to have somebody kind of say, hey, don't do this, Jason, and explain stuff. Can you take us back to when, you know, you were using credit cards and the wisdom you found out along the way from that?
Yes. Yes. So, when I was in college, I read Rich Dad, Poor Dad. Are you familiar with Rich Dad, Poor Dad?
Yes.
You know, have assets and don't have liabilities. And, you know, Robert Kiyosaki, Rich Dad, Poor Dad, and Dave Ramsey, they would butt heads a little bit on the borrowing money side of things. But I finished college and we were getting married. In my last semester of college, we bought our house. My wife, we were almost married, but my wife and my brother and I, when we pooled our resources, we were able to buy our house. So, and we still had to borrow a little bit of money actually from another family member. So great that we got a house, kind of starting off on the wrong foot. But our plan, we bought in a college town, we lived in the basement, and we were renting out rooms upstairs. So that was the rich dad thing, you know, turn your house into an income producing asset. So that was great. And that was actually probably a lifesaver for us, that we had that income coming in. I went to college for business and was working in a commission-based sales job. And if you've been in sales before, you know, sometimes you'll have a bad month and you think, oh, you know, next month will get better. You know, next month will get better. Well, I was stringing the bad months a lot in a row, and the good month, they weren't getting better. It came to the point, over a period of years, it was, but probably 3 or 4 years. At the worst of it, I think it was when we had two of our first two kids, and we were out of money, and I started paying my mortgage with my credit card. And I knew in my head it was dumb. But I didn't have any other choice. And it was like, okay, it'll get better. You know, we'll do a big sale. Da, 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 da. It'll get better. I'll pay it off. No. So paying my mortgage with my credit card, not telling my wife about it, not because it was a big secret or I wasn't intentionally trying to hide, but we just didn't talk about it much. And I kept thinking, oh, this will get better. This will get better. And it didn't. And we maxed out our credit cards, and I actually stopped paying my mortgage for a couple months. I'm pretty sure it was. Anyways, this was around 2008. I was working in the financial world, and ironically enough, working in finance, personal finance, and the market. Well, 2008 was a bad year for things, and it was really bad for me. My dad and my uncles had a family business. it had come to a point, I actually had asked my parents to borrow some money. You know, I know what it's like to have to go to your parents and ask them for money. You have a house and a wife and kids, and you got to borrow money from your parents. It's not a very confidence building exercise. I know what it's like to have my wife in line with the kids at the grocery store and her credit card or her debit card is declined and she's leaving. The kids are like, hey, Mom, why are we leaving all the groceries out? They go, well, there's no money, kids. Those are humbling experiences. And luckily, I had a great community, i.e. my dad, my uncles, my family. They're like, hey, my dad saw I wasn't busy. He was super busy at work. My uncles were super busy in the family business. We manufactured farm equipment. I started working for them a little bit. You know, if anyone's been involved in a family business, a lot of us are like, you know, I am never going to work in the family business. But, you know, sometimes God has a way of kind of jiggling things around on us and we end up somewhere where we were not intentional about getting. And so the plan was I was going to help out for a couple weeks at the family business doing some work that they had. And that turned into about 10 years. So, but it was a lifesaver for me. And I loved it. By the end of it, I loved what I was doing. I was the foreman in our shop at the end of that time. And we had a great team of machinists and welders and guys that were just thriving. And I loved it. So anyways, I went to work for the family business. And that's when now I was generating, getting some income in and starting to really work hard at paying off our debts. And Dave Ramsey's principles were a huge part of that. So yeah, that's kind of where we started.
I'm thinking about the fact of where it's at with the work and now credit card maxed and now the mortgage hasn't been paid in a few months. I can't imagine like how much stress that had to have been, but that would have been the catalyst to definitely go to mom and dad and be like, help.
I was out of options. You know, I was out of options and you know, God provides for us too. I remember one specific time, you know, I've been in a church where like people give money to the missionaries or something like that. I wasn't a missionary. I was a poor salesman and someone dropped an envelope of cash in our mailbox, $700. I remember it was, and our roof needed, and it was a note on it said to help you fix your roof. I wasn't a missionary or a pastor or anything. I was just a regular guy and someone, I still to this day don't know who it was. Someone saw something or God led them to do something to help us. And it was just like, thank you, God. And like, okay, this is, I can't help myself to some, you know, but there are people around that are willing to help and just so grateful for those moments of generosity and stuff. So Dave Ramsey's first thing is save $1,000. He's got 7 baby steps. The first one is save $1,000. And instead of then having to pay your emergency, your brakes go on your car and you need to get a brake job done, or with all your kids, your washing machine breaks and you need to get a washing machine, $1,000 is going to help cover a lot of emergency expenses. I owed the dentist money. $1,000 would have helped pay for the emergency dental work that the kids needed. So we did that. We saved $1,000, and the freedom that came with $1,000 was unbelievable. So many worries went away that if any of those sorts of things happen, I literally have $1,000 here and I can pay for it. I don't have to put it on the credit card. I've got the money here. The mindset shift that happened with $1,000. And when I read about it in Dave Ramsey's books and stuff, I was like, I don't know if I want to pay off the debt. Do I want to, but I didn't skip it. And the $1,000 made a huge difference. So we did that and that was a game changer. Believe it or not, it was a game changer.
Yeah. Because it's interesting. Like when you look at it, you're just like you're talking about, hey, logically, I want to pay the debt off. But if we were thinking logically, we wouldn't have got, you know, to where we are.
I was never thinking logically.
Yeah. I mean, how many of us do when it's like, oh, hey, I want this? That is not logic. So yeah, as you look back at, you know, where you had started with, you know, the whole thing with the credit card and getting behind on the mortgage and then getting out of it. What are some things like when you look back that were, I wish I knew this. And if you were talking to you know, yourself at that younger age, what are some things you would want to say, like, hey, these are potholes and these things over here don't do. Mm-hmm. Like, what do you feel like were some things to stay away from and some things to focus upon?
The funny thing is there were literally people telling me those things at the time. And I have a mentor, and he used to say, if what you're doing isn't working, you need to either change what you're doing or change what you're doing. And I'll say that again. You either need to change what you're doing or change what you're doing. And so in my scenario, that meant I either need to sell more, change what I'm doing, or I need to make a career change and change what I'm doing into another field where I can generate the income that I need. And he would say that all the time, but I wasn't doing it. And I guess I just kept thinking it's going to get better and better. So what I would have said to myself is, like, make the change sooner. When you see the red flags coming up, you know, when I first had to pay my mortgage with my credit card, looking back now, I'm like, how was that not a huge red flag? Like, give your head a shake. You've got to do something different. So yeah, if what you're doing, you probably know if what you're doing isn't working. There are probably red flags coming up, and you're probably aware, but you're maybe thinking, if I keep going, it's going to get better. It's going to get better. So, you know, listening to your mentors is maybe the lesson there, and not being afraid to be looked at as a failure, thinking, oh, you know, Jason couldn't make it in the commission thing. You know, I'm a failure. People talking about me, you know, we spend more time worrying about what people think of us than nobody's thinking about us. No one's, you know what? Just let it go. Don't worry about what people are thinking. So I should have made a change earlier, looking for those red flags. Listen to your mentors. And then don't be afraid to ask for help either. Like if I'd asked for help sooner than when from my dad, for example, you know, he probably didn't know how bad it was until I was like, hey, can I borrow some money? So being authentic and genuine with and vulnerable with where you're at, you know, people didn't know we had a Visa and a MasterCard and a investment loan, and I owed my sister money and I owed my brother money and I owed my grandma money. Like, no one knew that except for me. So having that vulnerability, you know, is so key to making the change that you need to make to move ahead.
Yeah. And just being aware of where you are, like self-awareness.
Yes.
To say, like, oh my gosh, okay, it's been a few months. Things haven't changed. And then, like you talked about, being open to ask, you know, like, hey, I need some help, or can I get some advice? Mm-hmm. Creating those relationships around us, you know, intentionally making sure before we need them, that we're already working on building them. So it's not, you know, like, oh my gosh, now I'm in a bad situation.
Yeah.
I got to find somebody who can give me advice. It's like, no, that's the wrong time. We should have built the bridge before we need to get to the other side.
Yeah.
So,
talking to my wife too, would have been huge. We just weren't talking about our finances. I heard someone say the other day they got married and they kept separate bank accounts and they just did their own thing. And then, I think they actually did a Dave Ramsey course too. And we're like, oh, we should put our finances together now that we're married. And I watched that. I was like, yeah, no duh. Like, doesn't everybody know that? But 20 years ago, that was me. We had our finances together, but we just weren't talking about them. So communicating what's going on in a marriage, financially, emotionally, spiritually, with your kids, with your career, what's going on? How are you doing? That communication my wife would have told me a long time before, like, Jay, you need to make a change.
Yeah. Often, I know for me, like with my wife, if I'd listened to her, there's a lot of things I would have avoided. But unfortunately, I was sitting there going, yeah, I got to figure it out. I'm the husband, you know, I'll figure this out and get it right. Mm-hmm. No, dude, she has a unique perspective. And that is what I loved about her when I was dating her. But, you know, then I became dismissive about it. So, I'd love to, you know, see how, so once your wife found out about where things were, did that impact the relationship between the two of you? And if so, then how did you work to reconcile and rebuild the relationship, like the trust, mm-hmm. you know, because you're not talking about it. Hmm. And I've done that thing of not talking with my wife, but my reasons were different than yours. So, yeah. How did things work out from there?
Yeah, I guess. So it all came out. I started working and then I was like, here's what we're doing. Here's the situation. And she was very understanding. She's she's a team player. That's maybe a little bit cliche, but like, we're in this together. We're going to get through this together. You know, there honestly was not a whole lot of pushback or conflict or like, Jay, you're a crazy idiot. Like, what are you doing? Like, she is a very gracious woman and she's the best wife I've ever had. So she was really great. But then we just started to work together and we were like scrimping, like, we would never like go to a Starbucks or in Canada, we have Tim Hortons. Like, we were not buying any coffee. There was zero coffee. And she talks about, you know, going grocery shopping with kids and then wanting to stop at Tim Hortons and get a tea on the way back, but not going to Tim Hortons to get the tea because she knew we were now working to pay off our debt. And so spending $1.33 on a tea, she wasn't going to do it. So she was just so supportive and so great to get in there as we started then. The debt snowball, which Dave Ramsey also talks about, which is paying your lowest debt first, paying minimums on everything else, and then go to the next highest debt when the first one's paid off, roll all your money into that one. And it starts to really move quickly when you start doing that. So we scrimped, we saved, we bought, we used cloth diapers because it was cheaper to reuse cloth diapers, you know, even though people haven't been using them for 50 years, but we were using them. There's a community of people using cloth diapers and dumping them out and washing them off. And I helped do some of that, but she did most of it. She was just such a trooper, Mike. And you know, we bought used furniture or we went without furniture. Mm-hmm. And so she was all in like, okay, let's get this solved. She came from a family that was very conservative financially. Her dad's an accountant and, you know, if he knew what was going on, he eventually did. Like, he wouldn't have let me marry her if he knew how dumb I was. But anyways, she was very patient and so grateful for her support to get through this, you know, and look back on it now and be like, wow, I made a lot of dumb mistakes. And thank you for coming along for the ride and helping with the good stuff, getting out of that hole.
Yeah. And I think the amazing thing is it's like the sacrifices that you make at certain points in your life. Those aren't lifelong sacrifices, right? Necessarily. Right. So your perspective, you know, like your wife's perspective, hey, I see that, you know, I could pull over and I want a coffee or I want the tea. Sorry. But I'm willing to make that sacrifice right now because I know this is the pain that I'm going to put up for a certain amount of time. Mm-hmm. Almost like going to the gym, right? You start those first couple of weeks. They suck because it's like the next two or three days I did biceps. Holy mackerel. I can't lift a peanut butter and jelly sandwich. You know, it's like your muscles are aching and screaming at you. Like, why? But you're being intentional and purposeful in what you're doing. You're drawing it up. You're on the same page. It sounds like you guys were communicating with each other. So you know where you're going and where each other are at. Dude, it's so vital and pivotal to know, hey, this is the length of time and this isn't the sacrifice forever. So I like the fact that you guys put in the sacrifice for that time and then we're like, okay, great. Now we're on to different, you know, pastures. This is a different story that we're entering into.
Yeah. I'll tell you one little thing from when we were getting near the end of that process. We still had some debt. We had about $20,000 worth of debt left to pay off. But in the meantime, we had also had more kids and we now needed the big homeschooling family van, like the full size van. We needed a 15 passenger van. And so I was like, we're not going to borrow a nickel to buy this van. We're going to pay cash. So we had started saving up to pay cash for a van and we were trying to save $20,000. And we were almost at our 20,000. I'm like, we're going to buy the van. Cause everywhere we went with our whole family, we would have to take two vehicles. So we drove a minivan and a Honda Civic. If the whole family was going, she could take the kids on their own. But if we went together, we'd have to take two vehicles. And we did that for almost a year, I think. And I was done with that. So I said, we've almost got our 20 grand. I'm looking for vans. I'm online looking up used vans, and I found one. And she said, you know what? I think we should just take all the money we save for the van and just pay off the rest of the debt and be done with it. And I was like,
the anguish,
the pain and personal anguish. But, you know, the Dave Ramsey brainwashing was in my head. My wife was in my head. And so we did that. And so we paid off the debt, and then saving for the van like went super fast, because now we didn't have any other payments. And we actually, you're probably familiar with Pat Lencioni. Pat Lencioni has The 5 Disadvantages of a Team, I think, is his big book. He has another book called The 3 Signs of a Frantic Family, I think. And he talks about working together as a family towards a goal. So we literally, I made a scoreboard and I called it the Vanometer. And this was a picture of a van. And it was at the top was $20,000, and it broke down in $2,000 increments. And so every time we got some money and put it into the van savings account, I would pull out the Vanometer and I would have the kids color it in like, okay, we're coloring up to the $4,000 mark. We're coloring it up to the $6,000 mark. So the whole family now was intentional. And again, like you said, we're not going to do this forever, but we're working towards a goal, and we had the Vanometer on our wall. And we were filling it up until we had saved the $20,000 cash. And I called the dealership and I said, hey, I want to literally like pay cash, like dollar bills. Can I come in with $20,000? And we'll take that. And I called twice just to make sure. So I went to the bank and I wanted to get fives. I'm like, can I get $20,000 out in fives? And they're like, no, we don't carry $20,000 in fives. That's a special order. So I had to settle for 20s. But I filled up the briefcase with 20s, and we walked into the car dealership, and the receptionist looked at me with my briefcase. She's like, you didn't. And I said, I did. I put the briefcase down and opened it up, and it was full of cash. I had my 3 oldest girls with us. They were like 10 and 12 and 8 or something at the time, a little bit older. But I was like, girls, it takes real money to buy a vehicle like this, and I want you to see this is how much it takes. So, you know, there were hard years. But there was hope at the end, and we worked our way through it. One of my mentors always says, what one man can do, another man can do. You know, if I can pay off my debt and get from $25,000 in debt or whatever our number was and pay it off and then save and pay cash for vehicles, you know, you can do it. There's nothing that another man does that you can't do. What one man can do, another man can do. And Mike, I think that's the hope. The hope is that you're not alone out there in your mistakes, and other guys have got through it and got healing and got freedom, and you can do it too. But sometimes oftentimes all the time, it's going to take some hard work and some intentional effort to get to that point.
Yeah. I think it's like we unintentionally got to where we are, and it's only intentionally that we get out of that situation.
That's funny how that is.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you don't wander into stupid normally, but I've done that. I feel like, you know, it was like, well, what did you think was going to happen? But I don't think I purposely go.
You don't wander into stupid. That's a goal. That's gold right there.
Yeah, there we go. It's not like when I look back, Jason, it's not like I was intentionally meaning to hurt my wife and my family.
But absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, which one of us is as dads and husbands mean to, but that was where I got to by just kind of being who I was and casting off the responsibility, right? Going, I'm hurt because of what happened because of my parents. Well, it's their fault. Nah, dude, you're an adult, you know? And it's like financially, emotionally, mentally, physically, you know, relationally, wherever we end up. There's a way out.
Yeah.
But we've got to know where our North Star is. And just like you were, hey, $20,000 is how much we're going to buy the van for. We've got to maintain that with, you know, whatever change we're wanting to bring about. Mm-hmm. So, dude, I love the fact that you got one, you listened to your wife. You didn't just dismiss her and go, this is the plan. We don't deviate from the plan. You're both on the same page. You listen to her and, you know, talk it out. Right.
Not all the time, but sometimes.
Hey, man, we're all in that boat. I feel you, brother. But she is at least coming to you and going, Jason, this is what I want to do. When they go quiet, that's the part to worry about. It's like flag. You burn the bridge. Yeah, you burn the bridge, right? I mean, it's like she doesn't feel like you're trustworthy. Mm-hmm. So the fact she was still coming to you. As a fellow dad, Jason, I've got four. I've had people come up to me and go, I don't know how you do it with four. Hmm. Oh my gosh, I've got one. I've got two. I just feel overwhelmed. What have you found, you know, having nine with one more on the way? Like, how do you purposefully love your children? And they're all unique. It's not like you, cloned them and went, I know how to do this. They're all unique. So you have to show up differently.
Yeah.
Like what have you done well in the process that you would say, you know, hey, for another dad out there, this is what I would offer as guidance, as a mentor, maybe.
Yeah. Well, I've made a lot of mistakes and I haven't figured it all out. That's for sure. But one thing that comes, so our oldest is 18. She just left home for a 1 year program. So she's thriving, I'm happy to say, and not because of anything we did. I don't know. Well, sure, I'm sure we did some things, but she's just, God has been good and she's doing very well. But I tell her still, and I must have heard this from someone because I didn't dream it up, but I don't know who I heard it from. Like, I would tell her, look, Annabelle, when she was 14, I never had a 14-year-old. And I'm doing my best to be a dad to a 14-year-old girl, but I've never done it before. So I'm going to make mistakes. And I would literally have this conversation. I'm going to make mistakes. I'm trying to do my best. So if you would just give me a break, I'm trying the best that I can. And I've said that to my other kids too. You know, I've never had a 14, 16, 18-year-old before and other kids involved. And I'm going to make mistakes, but I'm trying to do my best. We're on the same team here where I'm trying to help you win. We want to win together. So I literally have that conversation with my kids saying, look, I haven't done this before and I'm going through it, but I'm doing my best. So hopefully that gives them some grace for me when I do make mistakes. Practically, last night we had a Monday night, I went to a city council meeting. I'm trying to get involved in local politics a little bit. I took my 12-year-old son along with me. So finding time to be with your kids, he didn't necessarily love it. He didn't hate it either. And I gave him like, here's some things to look for. You know, I said on the way there, I'm like, who's having influence here? I want you to look around and see, they might argue about things or debate. Just look and observe. And I want you to try and figure out who has the most influence in that room. So I kind of gave him something to think about during the meeting. And it was a 1 hour city council meeting. But the point that I'm getting across is take your kids with you when you do things. I went to a video filming course that I was trying to learn about how to get better doing video stuff. And I took my second daughter, she was 12, I think at the time, and it was a 1 day course. And I took her along with me to the course. So getting your kids to do things with you and to be involved in the adult world a little bit too, like they'll step up to the plate, they'll learn things, they'll see interactions with other adults and they'll be able to carry themselves. But I think if dads involve their kids more in those sort of things, you know, practically going to the hardware store, going to the bank, going, take your kids along with you. Whenever I leave the house, I'm like, does anyone want to come with me? And there's usually 18 hands. Well, the older's not all the time, but there's a lot of hands that go up. The 4-year-old, 5-year-old wanted to go to the city council meeting. I'm like, you know, I don't think so, but maybe when you get older. So making the most of the time, redeeming the time that you have, you know, doing things with your kids. We built some bunk beds for the boys and they were in the shop and they were cutting wood. They were operating the saw. And anything you do, bring your kids along for part of the journey. And that's how I try to make time for my kids and engage in them one-on-one, different hobbies and in their hobbies as well, which I may not always be too excited about, but trying to engage in what they have interest in.
Yeah. And I think that's so wise in bringing them along with what you're doing, because it's going to help them grow and be observant of what's going on. But it's one of those that it's like, Jason, I can say from the way I grew up, there were a lot of life skills that I didn't have when I got to adulthood because my dad wasn't around and sharing that stuff. And it's like, cool. Now I get to learn it on my own. Sweet. You know, just exactly where you want to be. Not really with a chop saw or the bandsaw. It's like, please, somebody teach me how to do this first. So bringing them along to see like, hey, this is how, you know, professionals are interacting. This is how you read the room. This is how you present yourself. Those are life skills that are invaluable, especially as they grow up and they'll have time to practice, you know? So I think that's super wise. Also, how then do you make sure that it's like you have time with your wife to make sure that that relationship is solid? Because when we as husbands and wives are like solid in our relationship, that gives security to our children and creates a more peaceful home. So how are you able to do that?
Yeah. Not very well, but hopefully okay. So we try to go out similar to what we went grocery shopping together the other night. You know, this is not like Mr. Romance, out for dinner and flowers and stuff. It was going grocery shopping together. So similar kind of principle is doing things together and then doing simple things too. Like, okay, let's go for a walk for 20 minutes and I just get some things off my chest that I'm thinking about. And it's literally, we just walk out the door and walk down the road to the next street back and forth. You know, those little times together, I think really makes a difference. And early in our marriage, I would guess this is maybe opposite to most marriages, but I was the more expressive one, like, hey, this is how I'm feeling. This is what's going on. You know, the same old story, like your wife is crying and you ask her how she's doing. She's like, it's fine. There's nothing wrong. I'm just bawling my eyes out. I'm like, yeah. So she has really grown a lot. I literally said this to my 16-year-old daughter like yesterday, like your mom used to have a hard time telling me how she feels. And now she's very good at it. And so when we have time together, is just getting the things out that we want to get out, because we are not going to have a weekend necessarily, but we might have 20 minutes. So taking those small moments that we have and making the most of them. And I don't always make the most of them. Sometimes I'm, you know, looking at forklift accidents on YouTube, but there are times that we are intentional when we're together and we are engaging with each other and just trying to make most of those moments together, really trying to have a date night.
Yeah. You do what you need to do with what you have available.
Yeah.
I think it's that resiliency of what you've talked about in the midst of, you know, hey, we're on target towards this goal. This is what we have available. I'm going to do what I need to. And I think keeping that in mind of it doesn't have to be expensive. It doesn't have to be extravagant. It just has to be that you're putting in the effort, to make that relationship right.
Mm-hmm. That is a huge thing, because people, it doesn't have to cost you anything. Like literally go out and go for a walk, sit on the couch beside each other and have a cup of coffee. Like, money has nothing to do with it. That's not an excuse for not engaging with your wife. Like, do it and do it free.
Yeah. Yes. And there are free things when we look for them, right? So, last question. And I want to understand, like, what are you doing to make sure you're able to show up both for, you know, yourself, what you've got going on, your children, your wife? How are you preparing yourself to show up the best for everybody else as far as, and also the responsibilities that you have?
That's a great question. Does anyone here have a great answer? Anyone? Okay. How do I show up at my best? You know, we live in a family. I think maybe the concept is that we're individuals and we need to thrive as individuals. And there's an element of that's true, but we are in a family. I live in a house with 11 other people, and that is the reality of my life. And so if we're not integrating our lives together and being able to, if we can't do that, we're going to have a lot of problems. So it's finding ways to, you know, I don't know if you just saw my 10-year-old boy just walked through the room here. It's trying to integrate our family into everything that happens, I guess. Sitting around the table and having meals, asking my wife to edit something for my book. Like 2 hours ago, she was sitting on the bedroom floor over here editing something for my book. So working together as a team, and not trying to do everything by myself. So I say that. I also like playing drums. And so I have a drum set, and I find it just a stress relief to go out and play drums. But now my boys are playing drums. My son just got a guitar. My other son got a bass. My daughters play piano. So now I'm able to do my stress relief thing, but with my kids as well. And we're sitting around and playing music together. And I'm like, this is something I've dreamed of doing, and I am enjoying it. And it's filling me with life, but it's also building time with my kids. It's also quantity of time with my kids, which leads to quality of time with my kids. They're learning a skill. I'm relaxing through it. It's amazing. So my kids are now starting to become part of these life-giving activities. My three oldest daughters have done a Tough Mudder event, which is a 10-mile obstacle course. I've done a few of them, but the last two I've done with my teenage daughters. And my 16-year-old daughter, she just loves it. And so that is exercising and doing things to relieve stress is great for me. But now I'm running with my teenage daughters. We're running together. And now the life-giving activities that I am partaking of are now involving my family as well. And I love it. It is just an unbelievable gift to have my kids involved in life-giving activities with me. At night, I like to read. And so I will usually get some quiet time of reading business books, biographies, because I just love reading and I always have. So that is also a life-giving thing for me. Walking, reading, those are good activities that I do solo without the crew. So
That's awesome. I love the way you're integrating them, and you're also doing stuff that's still following your passion, but it's not like, hey, this is the Pinterest image of what a man has to look like, right? I have to have my golf clubs and golf bag and bass fishing boat or all this other stuff in order to prepare myself. It's what's available. You're still looking at, this is what's available within the confines of the season of life.
Right.
It's not forever, but it's like, how do I check off as many investments as I can right now with where I'm at? And I love that, Jason, because it's like, you're again, aware, like you're self-aware, you're situationally aware, and I'd even say resource aware, to what's around and how you plug that into your life to make it the most successful version. You're not looking for perfect. You're looking for functional and healthy. So I love it, Jason. You are crushing it in my books, man. So, dude, I appreciate your transparency, your openness, and just saying like, hey, it's not perfect, because, I venture to say any of us get it perfect. We can put up the facade, but that doesn't benefit anybody else nor us.
No.
So,
and we're seeing that so much with social media and stuff. Like, we're seeing everyone's perfect life. We're seeing them on the beach. We're seeing them on the golf course. We're seeing them at the baseball game, you know, sitting at the restaurant with their happy family. And I was talking to a dad the other day, and he has a picture up of his family. And he's like, I keep that picture up. We're all smiling, but we were like yelling at it. It was at Disney World or something. So it was a picture at Disney World. It's like, but we were literally like all yelling at each other before that. We stopped. We smiled for the picture. My wife was mad at me. He's like, the social media, Instagram, like, man, we're all making mistakes. I'm getting mad at my kids. And then I'm trying to apologize if I do make a mistake. Like, I get mad at my wife. I give her the silent treatment. She gives me the silent treatment. Like, we're all in this, guys. We're all doing the stuff, and we're doing it bad before we can do it good. Maybe we're still doing lots of it bad, but yeah.
I think that bar, like the Instagram/Pinterest portrayal of what life is probably going to become more delusionally unobtainable as we get into AI and it being able to paint that image, right? It's just one of those of, look, talk with people. This goes back to that community and having mentors like you've talked about. Talk with them. Is this normal? Am I okay?
Yeah.
Or, you know, is this something I should or shouldn't expect? And how do I adjust? And what am I being blind to? Like,
yeah,
dude, you can't tell from somebody else's external portrayal what's really going on behind the scenes, like you talked about with your friend. That's like, hey, look, we're all smiling. I took a snippet, a small snapshot in time where we're all being fake. Dude, done it, guilty,
because
you want to look good, but things were, you know, chaotic and you were at each other's throat, but you pulled your arms and, you know, took a nice picture and then you went right back to war. So,
man.
Jason, I totally appreciate you coming and joining me and just sharing about, hey, life is how you are showing up and what you're doing and what you're bringing. How can men connect with you outside of this podcast?
Thank you, Mike. Well, thanks for having me. Great questions. And thanks for asking that question. A couple things. So my main website is heydads.ca. .ca is like Canada.ca, heydads.ca. And there you can get to our YouTube channel and our podcast that Ryan and I do, which is called The Lifeguards Show. And I'll just maybe give a little plug for, I just wrote a fiction book for 8 to 12-year-old boys called Danger in the Jungle. I describe it as like the Hardy Boys meet Jurassic Park and Indiana Jones and have adventures. So that's what boys like. We were having a hard time finding great books for our kids to read, and they love reading. They've read lots of books. I go to the library. It's all like vampires and like sexually dressed women and like crazy horror teddy bears. And it's like, I don't know who's dreaming this stuff up, but we want our kids to read great stuff. So it's a story about family and adventure and courage. But heydads.ca will get you to all that stuff. Thanks, Mike.
Perfect. Thank you so much, my friend. I really appreciate you joining and sharing your insights and your journey. And dude, look forward to reading the book as well. Thank you, my friend. Thanks so much, my friend, for joining me on another episode. If you found the information within the show helpful, please leave a review on the platform you're listening to. It helps raise the show's visibility so other men can join us in breaking free. See you on the next episode, and remember to continue putting yourself out there. Have a great one.